Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hello you and welcome to bonus partly political broadcast. It is Friday morning. I have just watched my daughter smash porridge into her face repeatedly. And here you go for you. It's a bit of bonus Graham, as I mentioned in episode 118. Obviously, if you've not heard episode 118, you might want to go back and do that first. Or if you heard it and you have absolutely no interest in yet more Graham Thompson from Greenpeace, then, well, this isn't very long, this, so why not just play it on mute and then never tell me that you didn't actually bother to listen to it, and I'll just see the listener stats go up, and look, no one will be hurt by your beautiful, beautiful lie. Anyway, what I mean to say is, when chatting to Graham Thompson from Greenpeace, who I interviewed for episode 118, after the interview, he told me all about some of his fascinating life as an eco-activist, and he's done lots of non-violent action, and been involved in shutting down petrol stations, blocking runways, and at one point sleeping on a chimney, but not in a sort of Santa Claus way, more in an excellent, you know, campaign against pollution way. There's also some very interesting chat about types of cars and the pollution they cause as well, which I found really interesting. So here's some of that for you. It's only about 15 minutes. Enjoy that. Have some bonus Graham. So, Graham, when Googling you before interviewing you, I found that you've been an eco-activist for quite some time. You've been involved in some quite interesting direct action that's led to you being arrested quite a few times. How did you get into that? And can you tell me a bit more about some of those? Like, when was it Shell that you blockaded the stations for?
Shell and also I used to do a lot of campaigning against Esso. Back in the day. I'm actually unusual as a direct activist in that I got involved via Greenpeace. So I started off in a local Greenpeace group, and I thought the idea of direct action was really inspiring. A lot of campaigning is kind of going to politicians and companies and almost begging, saying, oh, please stop doing this because it's a really bad thing. And direct action is to say, you know, well, please stop doing this thing because otherwise we will stop you. Is a much more empowering kind of sentiment to campaign with. So I joined Greenpeace, became a Greenpeace volunteer, Greenpeace activist, did Greenpeace actions, and they're extremely well organised. Obviously Greenpeace, compared to other direct activists, Greenpeace tend to be well funded. We're a sort of relatively big organisation, some very skilled, experienced people, and we can afford all the right equipment, that type of thing. So it's a great way to start doing direct action because you're doing it with almost this safety net around you, the Greenpeace organisation. And then I started meeting grassroots direct activists and got involved with doing some of that. And obviously that occasionally is just a bunch of mates, you know, four or five of you saying, hey, let's do this thing. And that's the level of organization and resourcing and funding, whatever you have. None. It's just you and some mates thinking this is a really good thing to do. Let's do it. And so those types of actions can be a little bit less well organized sometimes. But that's how I got involved. And the petrol station actions, which Greenpeace have done a couple of times, I found really inspiring. One of the first really inspiring things I did was an Esso station closed down. And Greenpeace organised people into teams, I think, of five people, and there were maybe 20, 30 teams around the country. And each team would go and close as many SO stations as they could. And there was a technique for doing this, which I probably shouldn't reveal in detail, but there's a quick, safe way of basically flicking the switch on a petrol station so that it doesn't pump petrol and doesn't work anymore. And it takes them quite a while, sometimes days, to sort that problem out and get up and running again. So if you know about this, you can go and basically flick the switch on as many petrol stations as you can until the police nab you and stop you from doing any more. And again, it was very empowering. It was kind of, you know, and the fact that we were in little groups meant that you also had a kind of feeling of control and independence within that little group. You know, when you're doing an action all together, there's obviously people who have the plan and are organising you, whereas this was more sort of self-organised, and that was an inspiring thing to think, oh, you know, four people in a car and we're powerful. You know, this is an interesting experience.
And how many did you manage to shut down?
Well, me and my little team in that one, I think we did 11, and that was because the target was 10. And we thought, well, we'll do 11. and we managed to do that without getting arrested. So that was really cool. And this was one team out of 20. So not every team managed to do 11. Some of them got nicked after two or three. But across the country, you know, we closed a lot of SO petrol stations.
And so what were some of the, because you sort of mentioned to me in your emails that you've been arrested quite a number of times. Was that one of the events where that happened? And can you tell me about any more?
No, that one I managed to avoid getting arrested. My direct action career, the first few years went extremely well in terms of not getting arrested and not getting convicted. And then it turned out that was just a lucky streak. And then after that, I started getting arrested and convicted quite often. But the British justice system, deeply flawed though it is, has a certain respect for protest. It's not just seen as a standard ordinary crime that should be treated as a standard ordinary crime. There is law, there's precedent within the British system that you should, you know, give this a little bit more respect and think about it a bit more carefully rather than just treating it as vandalism or a normal crime. And the police also, I mean, they have been pretty unpleasant to protesters on certain occasions. But if you compare the British police with police forces around the world, the British police is actually quite civilised when it comes to policing protest. And so we're lucky. We live in one of the best countries in the world to protest and to take direct action, in that our police and legal systems are a little bit more reasonable and sensible when it comes to dealing with it, as opposed to others. I mean, obviously, the type of things that I do in Britain, you would probably be a little bit nervous about doing in China or Russia or certain other countries, or where the police have firearms and that sort of thing. I've been arrested on runways a few times. That's my sort of speciality. I've been arrested on Nottingham East Midlands Airport runway, Stansted and Heathrow, and also some power stations. Obviously, these are all climate-related protests because until recently, the power sector in Britain was the main climate issue, and that's now kind of transitioning to probably aviation being the main climate issue, the main source of greenhouse gases. I did a lot of direct action on power stations and then a lot of direct action on runways. I once camped at the top of a chimney for a week, which is an interesting experience. and obviously got arrested and convicted for that one as well.
So on top of one of the massive kind of power station chimneys?
It wasn't one of the biggest ones. It was probably about, and this is from memory because it was quite a few years ago, I think it was probably about 7 or 8 stories high, the chimney. But it had a little, it had like a ladder, a back scratcher ladder, and a little kind of metal ledgy sort of thing. So it wasn't like I was clinging on with my fingernails. there was space to actually sit down. And we brought all of our food and sleeping bags and whatever and stayed up there for a week. And that was, again, you know, it's an interesting, empowering experience, as well as, you know, being a good way of sending a strong message, both to the company and, you know, ideally to the wider public as well.
And your sort of action on runways, is that, were you mainly sort of arrested for trespassing? Was it, you know, or was it health and safety? Because I guess being on a runway isn't a very safe place to be.
Yes, no, that's very true. When I've done runway occupations, three of them, there's various precautions which we take, and I would advise anyone else to take if they're considering doing a similar thing. And one is that you go in when it's non-operational. So you would go in airside, they call it, the area where the planes are, which you're not supposed to be in. You would go airside when there's a big gap between you entering the area and the next flight. And where, you know, when I say gap, I don't mean 5 minutes. You know, I mean like an hour or more. And so there's no risk of you encountering a plane landing or taking off. And the airport has plenty of time. Everyone has plenty of time to respond to your presence without panicking about anything. So then, of course, they can't use the runway while you're on it. And that has quite a big impact, both on the operations of the airport and... Again, ideally, sort of the public get to think about this issue a bit. And it's controversial because, of course, you are blocking planes and therefore you are blocking some people from going on holiday or perhaps, you know, doing important, useful things that they really need to do. But I was going to say, but we use that excuse to cover aviation generally. We pick on the most sympathetic reason for flying. But of course, the vast majority of flights are just leisure. The vast majority of flights are people just going somewhere to have fun. I don't object to fun, but it's possible to have fun without flying, and people should really give that some careful consideration before they opt for the flight.
Absolutely. And I mean, it's, you know, things like with the new Heathrow runway that's being built, that's everything shown that it being built is going to be terrible for the environment, yet they're still going ahead with it. So, you know, I think a lot of people are realizing that it's not a good plan, and I think they're becoming more and more aware that how damaging it is.
Yeah, I mean, the forecast at the moment, if the UK sticks to its climate targets, so we reduce our emissions in the way we say we're going to do, which is going to be challenging, but we're not doing badly compared to some other countries. If we do, then in 2050, aviation will be producing half of our carbon budget. So of all the emissions that we're producing as a nation, half of them will come from aviation. Everything else, you know, power production, transport, road transport, cement production, steel production, domestic gas heating, everything will have to fit in the other half. That's if we don't build the third runway at Heathrow.
Oh, wow.
If we do build the third runway at Heathrow, it's going to get tricky. And when I say tricky, I mean impossible.
So just to sort of end on a more positive note, I was going to say, of all your kind of direct action, what's been the best result that you've had from it? What's been the thing that you feel most kind of proud of? Has there been anything you've gone through and that's made a definite change?
Yes, I mean, it's difficult. Direct action, it will be one tactic in a campaign. And if you do a direct action that doesn't have a campaign attached to it, it's just a one-off unique event, it's unlikely to get you the change that you want. Sometimes a single intervention can be quite powerful. I remember when the Hudson report came out, which you may not remember, but it was a report into the government's behaviour around Dr. David Kelly and weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Mm. And basically a judge, Lord Hutton, was looking into how the government misbehaved. And he came back with a report saying, no, the government had done everything absolutely honestly and straightforwardly, and the only people at fault were the BBC. And this was a bit of a transparent whitewash. That's a contradiction in terms, isn't it? Transparent whitewash. You understand why? You understand what I mean? Obvious whitewash. And so me and some friends did a little stunt, really, rather than direct action, where we dressed as judges and threw whitewash over the gates of Downing Street. And that had no further campaigning before or after. That was a specific event that had nothing attached to it and no further sort of argument from us. It was just a one-off event. But it meant that the reporting of the Hutton report was accompanied by a picture of judges whitewashing Downing Street, and so it framed that report as the whitewash that it so clearly was, and changed the political narrative around that, around the Hutton report. After that point, it was very difficult for anyone to refer to the Hutton report as if it was a significant investigation. It was, you know, before we did what we did, it was pretty obviously a whitewash, but we just sort of made that very, very clear and pushed it up the media agenda. And so that in itself was a very small direct action. The total cost of doing that in terms of, you know, costumes and transport and logistics and whatever was under £100. And
most of that was paint, I guess, as well, probably.
Yeah, yeah.
The cost of paint's quite high, yeah.
I also made a technical innovation, mixing white paint with lemonade. Exciting,
oh, nice.
Exciting effect. and that was, I think that was a good example of a small, cheap, easy, direct action that really had a big, long-term political impact. So it can be done. But generally, they work better if they're attached to a long-term campaign.
So, thanks again to Graham for the chat. And don't forget to support this podcast by giving it a review or a donation, or look, more importantly, by just spreading the word and getting other listeners on board this noise train, which is more environmentally friendly than the noise car that other podcasters use. So, screw them and their noise cars. What the hell is a noise car? An Audi O? Yeah, I'll shut up now. It was a bonus. I'm too tired for a podcast today. Look, new episode will be out on Tuesday, as per always. Who knows what will happen over the weekend? No one has any idea. David Cameron is threatening to come back with his face like an upset balloon, which I suppose is maybe the sort of thing, like, you know, when the only person who can lift a curse is the person who put it there in the first place. Who actually knows? But there you go. More stuff on Tuesday. Please subscribe and listen and like and donate and review and dance and dance and dance.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.